This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Morning, boys and girls. How's everybody doing today? You know, I just want to tell you, some weeks are all about the emotions, are they not? Joy, surprise, hope, love, envy, and wonder. All important and fixating. That wheel spinning at the start of every day, not knowing exactly what you're going to get. But loss may be the most immobilizing emotion of them all. But that's not such a surprise, is it? Someone that you love, that you want, someone you need, now gone. For that is loss. A key part of your everyday equation now removed, often leaving you lightheaded and unable to concentrate. Pleasant memories of the past and broken promises of the future all floating around. I've been thinking of this the last few days. Who helps set my compass? Who provides me with the best emotions? Happiness and comfort and amusement, respect, unconditional love. And what would I do without them? Suddenly, fear became my primary emotion. Typically, loss by death comes naturally, but still with dread and sadness. However, with loss by choice comes despair. Is one really worse than another? I need to know. My imagination seems strongest at helping me decide, putting me into uncomfortable situations, finding reasons to make me worried. Seasons to suffer sorrow. My friend lost someone important to her this week, someone who had been there through the major changes. And the loss came in a sudden and surprising manner. There are those who say that's better than a drawn-out loss, one you can see coming. But I don't know how one is better than the other. Pain still hurts. I don't know what to do when people you care about become lost. How do you help them? Should you? Could you? While some emotions are meant to be shared, can only be shared. Aren't others best experienced alone, at least for a time? I keep telling myself that. But the comfort does come. It may take a while. It may take a moment. But it will come. A hug from a friend. A kiss on the cheek. A lick from your dog. Whatever reminds you that others need you. That others want you. Past memories are a necessity. So is creating new ones. In honor of the Stonehenge and its missing piece. 11:05, boys and girls. Thank you. Thank you for the moment. An interesting program today. At least I think so, which is generally why we have them on, is because I find them interesting. A couple of very special guests. We'll do ladies first, make sure all these microphones are set up properly. Libby Whitley. Libby, how are you?
I'm well this morning, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in all the way from west of Lovingston.
Scenic Nelson County.
Scenic Nelson County. Yeah. We could have carpooled this morning. You are the owner, director?
Owner and president.
Owner and president of Mid-Atlantic Solutions.
That's right.
And what does Mid-Atlantic Solutions do?
We're an agency working with employers who employ workers under the Temporary Foreign Legal Visa programs, the H-2A and H-2B programs.
And obviously we're going to explain exactly what the heck that is, because that's a lot of...
That's why we're here today.
Technical. Is jargon a bad word to use for that?
Nope. I think it's very appropriate.
All right. We also have David Izakowitz. David, attorney at McGuire Woods, specializing in immigration law. Is that correct?
That's correct. Good morning.
Thank you as well for coming in today. Little background on you, David. How did you end up here in Charlottesville today?
Well, I've been in Charlottesville over 20 years. I've been doing business immigration for most of that time. Most of my clients are employers, and I'm primarily advising them on hiring practices and procedures for hiring foreign nationals and how to keep foreign nationals here legally.
Without mentioning specific clients, are we talking about people who are looking for, doctors and attorneys? Are you talking about people who are looking for, I'm looking for what level or of client that you might have and what level of education the worker might have?
Yeah,
or are you in all of them?
It's a good question. On the one hand, there is an extraordinary variety. On the other hand, the honest answer is the immigration laws, and we'll probably get into this, as they're presently structured, are heavily biased towards the more educated and the more skilled, which means that I can help those people much more readily than I can those who have less education and less skills.
But when you mean biased, you mean in favor of?
Meaning that there are more paths for those people to come into the United States presently and work legally.
All right. And that's because we are going to spend a lot of time today talking about the immigration bill. And I want to spend some time not just sort of explaining what it is so that I can understand it better and some of the listeners, but I also want to talk about one of the things that I think gets overlooked, which is the infrastructure of how that gets affected. And it's one thing to talk about. I think some people write it off as, so-and-so can't get their yard taken care of. But I think people forget other areas of our economy that will be affected in a deep and possibly a scarred way. And it doesn't matter who you are, what your economy level is, your social structure, it's what you want to do tomorrow in Charlottesville or on your vacation or whatever, and that's the kind of thing that I want to bring up as well later in the hour. All right, so who wants to jump into this? I want to start with the key points of the immigration bill as it stands today, because as we chatted very briefly in the lobby, it's changed a lot over the past time period.
Yeah, I'll start, and I'll just talk about some key points because we don't really have time to get into all the fine points. First thing I think the listeners need to understand is what you're hearing most about in the news today is the bill that's being that's before the Senate now and is being proposed by certain senators in what was called the grand bargain, meaning that the Republicans and Democrats, or certain key Republicans and Democrats, got together behind closed door with White House input to come up with a bargain, or what's called the grand bargain. And it's and that is just the Senate side. There's also the House side, which I'm not sure we're going to have time to talk about. But in the end, the two have to get together. But the reason the Senate side, I think, in particular, has gotten so much attention is it really rethinks the entire immigration process and makes some pretty radical changes. So let me just spend 2 minutes talking about those. Basically, what it does is it creates two new visa categories, one called Y and one called Z, so we finally get to the end of the alphabet. But I think they've got other motives for doing it. The Z category is the one that's created for people who are now here illegally. And if you're against the bill, you call it an amnesty provision. If for the bill, you think of the Z category as giving people a pathway to citizenship. But in its present form, and it can change over the next 2 weeks, the Senate's about to have a debate in which proposals will be made. In its present form, it says if you've been here on January 1, 2007 or earlier, then you can stay, Assuming that you pay some really high fees, just to give you an idea, for a family of four, the fees would be $9,000, which would be a fortune for a lot of the people we're talking about. And you can stay for 4 years, and if you want to renew it, you have to pay another $6,000, again, a huge amount of money. And eventually, and I won't go into all the details, somewhere down the road, and I mean a long way down the road, many years later, you might have an opportunity to apply for a green card.
Sounds like rent to be in the United States.
It sounds that way. It sounds a bit punitive to me, but that's my opinion.
I don't mean like it's a cheap rent. I mean, it's just like, you know, hey, yeah, you can stay here, but here's your rent if you want to, you know, walk around, do anything.
If you want to pay us off, we will let you remain. Obviously, assuming that you stay employed, there are all sorts of conditions, including staying employed, paying your taxes, staying out of trouble, all the things you might expect. But the other category, which I think Libby's going to talk about more, and I'll just mention, but also has gotten a lot of attention, is the temporary worker program. Some call it that's the Y category. Some call it a guest worker program. And that allows people to come here for 2 years at a time, but they have to go home for a year, and they can repeat that pattern three times. And as I said, I'm going to let Libby talk about that, so I'll stop there. But I just want to mention the other key part of it, of the Senate proposal. And the other radical part is it's going to totally rethink the green card. Most people think of the green cards, although they haven't been green for years, the permanent resident process. And it does it in a number of ways, but the most important is on the way it works now is most people get green cards either because their employer sponsored them for a job or because of some family relation. And it does away with employer sponsorship. That concept is thrown out the window. And as to family relations, it severely limits them basically to spouses of U.S. citizens or permanent residents and to parents of U.S. citizens, and it does away with all other categories. That's in a big effort to do away with what they call chain migration, which is what the anti-immigration forces, along with amnesty, that's the thing they hate probably second most, is chain migration, the idea that one member of a family gets a foothold in this country and then they bring their brothers and sisters and other relatives. And instead of that, what we're going to have is something that's like what the Canadians have now. It's a point system. It goes out of 100, and they basically give you points depending on how much we think that's worth. Your education.
Who's setting up these points?
Well, it's actually built in the bill, and I could dig it out later if people are amused. I don't have it readily handy, but I do have it here, as to how the points are distributed.
Do we get points? Do you get points if you're a good athlete and, you know, somebody wants you to play college ball for them or you know, if you're something else that...
You say that in jest, but that's a good question, because right now, if you're truly extraordinary at what you do, you can get a green card based on extraordinary ability, which is sort of what you're talking about if you're a top athlete.
Yeah.
And this whole system, it does away with that particular aspect of it. It's not that specific. It's more how many years, how much schooling you've had, whether you've gotten training in a field that we think is desirable, how old or young you are, single, married.
Does it matter how well you speak English? Because
yes,
a lot of
yes.
states talking about making English the only, you know, language or the...
Excellent. Yes. Excellent question. It does matter. Native speakers are preferred over non-native. Unless you score above a certain amount on TOEFL, which is the exam. So, yes, English is a hot-button issue. Among other things, this bill makes English the official language of the United States.
Let me ask you a question before we get Libby involved here.
Sure.
Because, to me, when I read about this, it seems like a lot of or some of the battlefront topics come from the border security. And I don't want to make it today's discussion as to whether we should or shouldn't have it or where it should go or how much money it costs, etc. But I do feel like asking, do you, and Libby, your opinion as well here, would things be sorted much more quickly if we separated the border security part of this from the immigration and worker issues?
Well, I'll start, and then I'll let Libby jump in. What I left out, because, as I said, this is a 400-page bill. It's hard to talk about everything. But what I left out is what you're asking me about now. The bill, and the House bill does as well, and this, the two don't differ very much except in details, puts in a lot more money, a lot more resources into border security, and a lot of the provisions I've been talking about have to be triggered by achieving certain levels of security or compliance with the program that's laid out. So a lot of money and resources are being put into border security. I think it's pretty clear politically that none of this is going to be sellable, both within Congress and outside of it, unless there is a very strong border security component. And the other part that goes along with border security that both bills actually have, too, is much stiffer enforcement in the workplace, setting up an employer verification database that we're all going to have to use, not just for immigrants, but all of us, in which we're going to have to present things like enhanced Social Security cards and driver's licenses that have biometrics on them, and that one could not be employed until the database system basically gives a green light. Some people have criticized this as sort of a Big Brother aspect to both of the bills, but it's a way of keeping track of who's here and where they work. And one of the things that a lot of people find unsettling is it's not clear what's going to be done with the information on the database once the database is collected and who's going to have access to it.
Well, Libby, what do you know? Take over for a minute and tell me your view on what we have put in front of us over the last couple weeks, I guess, in terms of the current immigration bill, how it affects the things that you know, your business and the things that you do. And then, again, maybe start with my question about separating the border issue versus the worker issue.
Well, I've handled immigration issues in various forms for the past 25 years, and I've always observed one truism, I think, Rick, and that is that immigration reform makes some very strange bedfellows. You know, last year we had, when the Republicans still had control of both the House and Senate, we had a House-passed bill that was border enforcement and increased internal security only. Of course, that went nowhere. There's still a huge amount of sentiment in both the House and Senate, on both sides of the aisle, interestingly, that perhaps any kind of employment-based changes, any of the visa program changes, any guest worker program, any legalization provisions should be postponed until we have some kind of border security in place and demonstrating that it's effective. I think with the politics this year are still very volatile. I personally believe we're not going to have a bill this year. That's just my guess. I think you've got Democrats in control, of course, of both houses of Congress, House and Senate, and a clear shot at gaining control of the White House in 2008. At the same time, you have the president having placed a significant amount of his personal reputation on the line. I think he feels that immigration may be the only legacy that the Bush administration leaves behind, and he's putting enormous pressure on Republicans in both the House and Senate to back off and work with the House and Senate Democratic leadership to get something enacted. So it's still, I think, an open question whether we're going to see anything. But clearly, in the employment area which my company works in exclusively, which is the H-2 temporary programs, something has to be done. You have an enormous amount of illegal employment in the industries that also use the H-2A and H-2B programs. The bill, as David mentioned a moment ago, in the current Senate bill, does treat the temporary programs in a passing fashion. David mentioned the new Y visa program, which is a temporary program that would permit people to come for 2 years and work in a fairly open-ended fashion, and then they would have to return home for one. And then could repeat that process.
How is that a bad thing?
Well, I think it's a bad thing in one outstanding respect, and that is that the bill is currently crafted in the Senate only permits 200,000 entrants a year. We currently have 12 million, by most estimates, about 12 million illegal aliens in the United States, the vast majority of which are currently employed. Now, the Z visa program will take care of legalizing or putting those 12 million into some sort of a legal status, eventually leading to citizenship if that's something they wish to pursue. But let's look at the numbers. About every 20 to 25 years, the American public demands on Congress finally reach a crescendo, and Congress will enact something in the form of immigration reform. I heard someone say the other day that the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act was neither immigration reform nor control. But if you take a look at the historical perspective, after the end of the Bracero program in 1964, the Bracero program was probably in the 20th century, the first structured guest worker program. Has a very bad reputation, probably deservedly so. In 1964, Congress, when they ended that program, offered all of the Braceros a means of staying in the United States legally. That legalized about 500,000 people. 20-odd years later, in 1986, finally Congress was pushed to the point of enacting the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, which is what actually put the two visa programs that Mid-Atlantic works in, the H-2 programs, in place. And that legalized 3 million. Now, about 20 years later, public opinion has pushed Congress to the point of considering another fix to the illegal immigration problem, and we're looking at 12 million. So you can see a pattern occurring, 500,000 to 3 million to 12 million. So the program, the temporary worker program at 200,000 is probably not going to meet the domestic U.S. demand for the kind of workers that are usually represented in the illegal immigration population. For instance, currently today, 81% of the farm worker population is foreign-born, and probably 90% of those are here out of visa status or illegally. In the construction industry, the Pew Trust recently released a report which suggested that almost 40% of the construction industry is working illegally. So you can see that there are portal industries, and that's what agriculture, construction, landscaping, the lower skilled, lower literacy, lower English language requirement type industries are the opportunity industries for these.
All right. We're off to a rocking start. I hope somebody wants to call up and ask a question. We do have David Izakowitz and Libby Whitley in the studio today as we talk about the current immigration bill, where it might go, what it actually is at the moment, and we're going to jump into how it affects our economy infrastructure in just a few moments. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN rocks. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, partly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms today. Highs 80 to 85, mostly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers, 60 to 65, then partly sunny with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow, 85 to 90. Right now, clear in the valley and 73, some clouds in Lynchburg where it's 72, and in Richmond where it's 78, but it's beautiful and clear here in Charlottesville at 71.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And if you're getting hungry, we want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for being out there and supporting WNRN. Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E guys.com. And we were talking earlier about Nelson County
It's the Nelson County Summer Festival, and it's going on this weekend. In fact, today at the Oak Ridge Estate, just south of Lovingston. On Sunday, you'll find Jay and Morwina, Ban Caribe, and the Seldom Seen. There's food, wine tasting, rural living exhibits, and tours of the estate. Information and tickets for the 15th annual Nelson County Summer Festival are available at nelsoncountysummerfestival.com. You can also get some tickets at the Charlottesville Plan 9s, Sidetracks, Greenberries, and Read It Again, Sam. Keep listening, and then head on down. All right, back in action with David Izakowicz and Libby Whitley as we're talking about the immigration bill. Again, 979-0919-1877-WNRN rocks. I'm curious, David, we were talking about special skills with the immigration bill. I want to just chat a little bit more about the sort of change from, it seems like that job skills and education levels have or are being pressed to take over instead of family ties. And am I right on that?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there are different ways you could categorize it. It sort of depends on how you're spinning it. There's no question that one of the purposes of this bill is to do away with what some people call this chain migration. And so, in theory, it should result in fewer green cards being given to families as opposed to businesses. I say in theory because, you know, if you go out there and read some of the blogs, which I do sometimes to amuse myself, as I said before, the new system doesn't really distinguish between business and family per se, with you know, a few exceptions or a couple of family categories. The new system is this merit-based system. And so it looks at a number of things, including, as I said, education and employment, but also extended family, English. So it's not clear which side of the line you're on anymore. The idea is that they'll look at people as total packages, see what they offer to the United States. And
it sounds like recruiting. I don't want to keep coming back to the sports thing, but it sounds like, you know, sports recruiting.
It sounds like, right. We want to get the people to come here that we like, or that perhaps some would say that look more like us, or act more like us, or think more like us.
We're going to allow fewer, so let's make sure that we're getting the cream off the top.
Yeah. You know, it might be helpful. I got out that chart, and I'm not going to read the whole chart to you, but I think the listeners would be interested in how it's broken up. Basically, there are four sections. As I said, you can get 100 points. So there's 47 maximum points you can earn for employment. So that there's 47 there. And that's things like U.S. employment in a specialty occupation. That's what most people think of as a profession, a high-demand occupation. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics, or a health-related field, that'll get you 8 points. Anyway, so that's 47 points.
When you say high-demand occupation, does that include some of the fields that Libby mentioned, that where you don't have to have strong English verbal skills?
I don't think so. As I understand it, and this gets into the real nitty-gritty of the bill, but I think the Department of Labor has a role to play, or will have a role to play, in what those high-demand occupations are. So it sort of remains to the honest answer is it remains to be seen.
So it doesn't matter who has all the help wanted signs up.
Right. It's not going to be that simple. Okay. In fact, the current system tries to do a little bit more of what you're talking about. It's sort of letting employers apply or sponsor foreign nationals for green cards because they can't find U.S. workers. So the people with the help wanted signs, at least in theory, it doesn't work all that well, which is why we're talking about a broken system. At least in theory, have a way to petition the government and say, look, I really need these sorts of workers. Please bring them in. But as I said before, that's done away with. Now individuals apply according to this point system.
Okay.
So let me just continue down the list. So education is 28 maximum points. You get 20 points for an advanced graduate degree, 16 for a bachelor's, 10 for an associate, 6 for a high school, down the line. So that prejudice that I talked about before gets retained.
Yeah.
15 points is for English and civics with native speakers or people who score over a 75 on the TOEFL. That's the language exam. Getting 15. If your TOEFL score is worse, but it's over 60, you get 10. And you get 6 if you can pass a citizenship test in English and civics. And then the last part of it are extended families. The remaining points are for families. And depending on how closely related you are. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say the emphasis is on education and employment, but other things like English and family become part of the process. Did you want to jump in on that, Libby? Or?
I think that sums it up. I would be very surprised if too many workers in the fields that are currently populated with H-2 workers would meet many, if any, of those criteria. Family, perhaps, but certainly not English language skills and education levels.
Yeah, so which goes along with what I was saying, that the mm-hmm. prejudice that's already in mm-hmm. the system is just continued.
That's right.
Well, mm-hmm. how does the fill help or hurt the businesses?
Certainly in terms of the agricultural employment opportunities presented by the bill, there are two separate programs that address agricultural labor issues. And interestingly, the agricultural industry has never gotten itself together to push for one particular answer to the agricultural labor dilemma. They have one bill called Ag Jobs, which is essentially, it's an extended version of the Z visa legalization. It would offer an opportunity for workers who are currently employed in agriculture to stay, get a green card if they continue to work in agriculture for up to a certain number of days in a 3-year period. And then there's also the H-2A program, which is just a variation on the current H-2A temporary non-immigrant visa program. It addresses some of the shortcomings in the current program. So agricultural labor is addressed, but in terms of any other industry that needs unskilled seasonal labor, there really is not much in the bill, unfortunately.
I would say, based on what I'm hearing from my clients, those who understand this, and I don't mean that to make fun of them, it's just so complicated, it's hard to make your way through it. But when they finally understand what's being proposed, most of my clients who are businesses are not too happy and don't mm-hmm. feel that it does help them. And the reason for that is on the skilled or highly educated side, most of my clients have people working here in something called an H-1B visa, which is a temporary visa that professionals use. And they keep them here in H-1Bs and sponsor them for green cards so that they can stay eventually and stay with their business. Well, let's take that as an example. What the new bill does, and I haven't really talked about H-1Bs, one of the problems with H-1Bs is there aren't enough of them. There are about 65,000 given a year. And this year, there were so few, they had to have a lottery to see who would get them, and only one in two employers got them.
And the program opened and closed on the same day.
The lottery
right?
opened and closed. Right,
day.
Right. It was a few-hour lottery, in effect. I mean, right. The lottery was held later, but you had a window there of a day to get your application in. But so there weren't enough of them. So the bill gives them more H-1Bs, but it does two things that completely takes away the benefit. One, and this is sort of technical, so just bear with me for a second. Right now, people can stay in H-1Bs even though it's a non-immigrant visa and pursue a green card even though that's immigrant. That's called dual intent. The government sort of pretends that a person has a brain and you can divide it in two parts and half of the brain intends to leave and half doesn't intend to leave. So it can conform with the law and pursue two things at the same time. Well, the new bill says, no, you can't do that. If you're in H-1B, then you're not intending to get a green card, and you have to leave here. And if you want to get a green card, then leave the country and apply for an immigrant visa. What does that mean for an employer? It means that they can only have that worker for a limited number of years, puts a lot of investment in that employer, and then that employer has to leave. And then, as I just mentioned, in addition, the employer itself cannot sponsor that worker. There is no such thing as an employer-sponsored green card. So the worker has to apply on his own based on all these other criteria. I mean, the bottom line is it makes it very hard for an employer to conduct his business in an orderly way and use foreign workers, which is maybe what some people want. Problem is, if they can't find domestic workers to fill those jobs, then that's what they're stuck with, is the foreign workers and with all the baggage that I've just described.
Lydia, I guess that's where it takes me now, is your business finds immigrant workers, correct, to come under the various sorts of HB1, HB2
H2A and H2B.
Uh-huh. And helps, I guess you find them a job that they want to work for an employer who can't find enough people to do what they need, right?
That's partially correct, Rick. Actually, first of all, these are not immigrant workers. In the H2A and B program, like the H1B, these are technically called non-immigrant workers because they come here for a fixed period of time to perform a specific job, and then they return to their home country. The H2A and B programs, workers come from a maximum stay of 10 months in any 12-month period, and they come on a seasonal visa, which means their employment is tied to what the Department of Labor calls a regularly recurring, easily identifiable annual event. Mostly, it's, of course, weather-related. They come in the landscaping industry. When the weather starts getting good in the February and March, they will come into the United States, work until November or December, and then return home. In agriculture, they pick apples, they prime tobacco, they work in vegetables, nurseries, wineries, vineyards. And so these are all weather-related events. In certain other H-2B applications, like in the hospitality industry, they would come for a season, ski season, summer season, whatever the particular resort caters to, they would come in for that season. So our company actually works with the employer. And like the H-1B visa program that David just described, this is an employment-based, an employment-driven visa program, if you will. The employer is the entity that begins the process. They first seek approval from the U.S. Department of Labor to employ foreign workers to the extent that U.S. workers are not available to fill these jobs. They get the Department of Labor's permission, if you will, a labor certification. Then the next step in the process is they obtain a visa petition from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is the follow-on agency to the old INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service. And then the third step in the process is working with recruiters, worker representatives, if you will, in the countries where the workers are coming from. The workers obtain H-2 visas on the employer-based visa petition and come to the United States to work only for that employer for the duration of the season that they've been given approval to have by the Department of Labor.
And how is the projected immigration bill, the way it's set up now, because we already talked about how it's changed, how is it going to affect what you do? I mean, does it shut you down? Does it make your job that much more difficult? Are you, instead of looking for out-of-the-country employees, do you start going around Nelson County to find more people? I mean, you know.
Well, interestingly, Nelson County, of course, has an unemployment rate of about 4%, so which, if you remember your old economics classes, is what they call structural unemployment, as in that approaches full employment. So we really don't have a lot of unemployed in Nelson County to fall back on.
You gotta go to Danville or something.
We actually represent 600 employers in 30 states, and we bring about 7,000 workers a year in to employers throughout that entire area. So we do rely on more than just a Nelson County-based workforce. The bill actually replaces the H-2A and H-2B programs with what they call the Y-2B and the Y-2A. And although the agricultural program isn't changed fundamentally by the Senate bill's provisions, the H-2B program would be changed fundamentally. Currently, there are about 150...
And the H-2B program is the seasonal?
They're both seasonal. The H-2B is the non-agricultural visa. H-2A is the agricultural visa, and H-2B is for everyone else. Okay. Every other employer with a seasonal labor need. Landscapers, by the way, are the single largest user of the H-2B program, although in Virginia we have landscaping companies, construction companies. The seafood industry is a big user of the H-2B program for oyster shuckers and crab pickers. So there are a variety of different kinds of job opportunities that are used, that are occupied by these H-2B workers. But it abolishes it. The Senate bill abolishes the H-2B program and replaces it with 100,000 Y-2B visas on an annual basis. Currently, that it would not even meet the need, the demand in fiscal year 2007, which is what we're in right now. Recent State Department figures suggest that about 150,000 workers are here in H-2B status right now. So the bill would obviously cut that back by a third.
All right, 11:40 here on the program as we talk about the immigration bill, getting into the infrastructure of the economy a little bit with that. Libby Whitley, Mid-Atlantic Solutions, David Zakowitz, an attorney with McGuire Woods.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, short stories for summertime. Runners-up for the annual fiction contest make the printer this week, and being the runner-up is pretty good when John Grisham, this year's judge, says, hey, second and third. Plus, it's the annual home issue at a time when, oh, so many subdivisions dictate uniformity. The Hook explores those places in the area managing to make their homes monuments to individual expression. And after hearing last week from the father, this week the mother talks about her 27-month jail sentence for buying and serving at her son's 16th birthday party. How is the former PTO president holding up? The Hook asking, is there a jail sentence for that? And apparently so. We also want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. You can get outside with everything from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. The professional staff at Blue Ridge can help you with camping supplies, maps, guides, and even guided backpacking trips. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found in the Barrack Show Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and in the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen. And we got about 20 minutes left. Patrick will be here for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Cinderella, no Milli Vanilli, no Debbie Gibson. But you will hear Red Hot Chili Peppers, Duran Duran, and Blondie. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, back in action with Libby and David. 979-0919. I got plenty of questions on my own here, but if you got a question, bring it on. 979-0919. Michael's out there to pass you through. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS if you need the toll free. All right, Libby, I want to get back, sort of follow through. You were talking about how the A bill related more towards the, I guess, the food economy. Is that correct?
The H-2A program, yes, agricultural employment.
And the B, sort of everything else.
Right.
I want to think about this from the aspect of those of us who live in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, WNRN can be heard from sort of the west part of Richmond to Lynchburg, Lexington, Harrisonburg, up to Culpeper, Orange, obviously right here in the center at Charles Hill and Albemarle. What I want to talk about is how this affects me. What businesses does this affect where when I go out tomorrow, assuming that everything has followed through and everything's been passed as it's currently up, you know, up on the board, where am I going to notice it the most and be upset with, why in the hell did we do that?
That's a good question, Rick. You've got H-2A workers employed in agriculture in central Virginia, in wineries, in vineyards, in plant nurseries, both greenhouse and field-grown plant stock, in orchard operations, and in the H-2B program, heavy users in the landscape industry in central Virginia of the H-2B program. The H-2B program, like its companion H-2A program, in my judgment, is a win-win for both the employers and the workers. First of all, let me address the question, the inevitable question people always have, which is, why aren't there U.S. workers performing these jobs, and why are these employers permitted to hire cheap foreign labor to undercut our domestic labor market? The answer to the first question, you know, why aren't they hiring U.S. workers, generally in these industries, I think you'll find that the average American, we have an aging population, And we have, particularly in the Central Virginia area, very low unemployment, as I mentioned earlier. So there, I would argue, are not American, U.S.-born, or naturalized citizens here to perform that work. Their choice is between a legal foreign worker or an illegal foreign worker in almost all of those industries. So it's a win for the worker when they come in on an H-2 visa. Let me use an example. Let's say you have two brothers. You have one brother who comes up here, makes a decision to come up as an illegal alien. He pays a coyote or a smuggler, a human smuggler, in Mexico, for instance, between $3,000 and $4,000. He runs a very high risk of being left in the desert to die, being robbed, murdered, shaken down, or dropped over the border with no idea of where he's going, where to find a job, doesn't speak English, doesn't have a bank account, credit card, social security card, or driver's license. On the other hand, you have his brother, who decided to come up here as an H-2 worker, an H-2A worker, let's say. He pays about $500, most of which goes to the United States government for visa application fees. He'll pay a small, modest amount, about $150, to a recruiter who handles all of the visa application work for him and arranges his transportation. He gets on an air-conditioned bus, and he comes to work in Virginia. He knows where he's going to work. He knows the name of the employer. Probably he's worked for that employer before because there's a very high rate of return among H-2 workers. They go back to the same employer year after year. So he knows where he's going, what he's going to be doing. He knows what he's going to be making. He knows where he's going to be living. He can tell his family how to reach him, which, of course, is not possible for the average illegal alien. So this is a win. And on the second part of the question, why an employer prefers this cheap foreign labor, let's be real clear. The H-2 programs are not cheap foreign labor. The U.S. minimum wage is currently $5.15. It goes up at the end of next month. Congress just enacted an increase in the minimum wage. But still, these are not minimum wage workers now, and they aren't minimum wage workers even when the minimum wage goes up at the end of next month. The average agricultural wage rate under the H-2A program is $9 an hour, and which, of course, is far above the FLSA minimum right now. The H-2B wages are paid at a prevailing wage level, which is set by the U.S. Department of Labor, depending on the job and the geographic area where the job is going to be performed. In landscaping, for instance, the wage rates are running between, depending again on geographic location, between $7.50 and $8.50 an hour. H-2B work is subject to time and a half over 40 hours a week, so they pay the flat hourly rate plus 50% for any hours worked over 40. Agricultural labor is exempt from the overtime provisions of the Fair Labor Standards Act, but that's true of any farm labor, not just H-2A.
Let me take this. I don't know if Gary's still hanging on or not. Gary, are you there?
Hey, Rick, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Great show. Appreciate your guests giving up their time to be there on this topic. I'm empathetic to the need for these people coming in to our country. I speak Spanish. I have taught Spanish. I have an adopted child through an international adoption. I have a sister who is an immigration lawyer. I have a brother-in-law who is an immigration lawyer. I was in the Peace Corps. I think what aggravates many of us is those who are in power in this country not doing something that's necessary to stop the illegal entry into this country. What I'd like to ask the guests, if they had the requisite votes that they would need in U.S. Congress, Senate, and House of Representatives, what would they like to see passed? Maybe two or three items that they think are the essential items that we need to solve the illegal problem and solve the workers that we need. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Thanks, man.
I'll let Dave start that one.
Okay, that's a big question. I'll at least tackle a bit of it. I guess my answer is, in many ways, I think that the Senate bill asks the right questions and tries to get to the right places, but does it all wrong. And what do I mean by that? I think it is a reality that we do need to have better enforcement, both of our immigration laws and more control of our borders. And that's probably something, to a large extent, we're not debating. But so I think that, to that extent, measures, you know, with regard to that are called for and well taken. I think we also have to recognize, though, which I think the bill does, I just don't like how it tries to solve the problem, that this is all driven by economies and jobs and employment. And it's clear that people are coming here because there's work here and there's not work in their native countries. And it's also clear that it's clear to me anyway, from my perspective, representing employers, that the vast majority, I'd venture to say 95%, if not more, of employers would prefer not to have to put up with the hassle of having to hire foreign workers or the fear of violating laws and would love to hire U.S. workers if they could, but they're just not there. So what that means is that you need a system that allows those employers to hire foreign nationals, and that system has to be one that does it given the realities of the economy, meaning you need to have the Department of Labor do something. You need to have the Department of Labor actually give some useful data as to what areas and what parts of the country unemployment is high and where workers are needed as opposed to where they're not needed and others might abuse them. You need to have visas allocated as a reflection of reality as opposed to arbitrary numbers based on data that you get from the Department of Labor. You need to give employers a system that makes sense, not one that tells them you can hire workers, for instance, in the temporary program for 2 years, but then you have to go send them back and find another workforce to replace them with, I guess, for a year or two, and then send them back. So you have this ridiculous merry-go-round. You need to acknowledge that there are 12 million unauthorized workers here. They're not going back. As a practical matter, we can't deport 12 million people. It just isn't going to work. We don't have the resources. So you need an orderly way of making them come out from out of the shadows and become legal. And an orderly way means that you can't have fines that are punitive and that you know they can't pay, and touchback provisions, which make them go back to their home country when you know they're terrified of leaving the United States. So you just need saying, as I said, the problems, I think I've just outlined them, are clear. I think the Senate understands what they are, but because they were formed in a bargain, they've come up with solutions that are non-solutions. They're just out there basically to satisfy certain partisan groups. I mean, just as a quick example, then I'm going to give it over to Libby so she doesn't get off the hook in answering this question. the idea of sending workers back for a year after two, I think is nothing more than punitive and is just sort of a nod to those, what those in the pro-immigrant community call the restrictionists. It's just a way of saying, don't worry, we're not going to let them stay here for long. We're going to send them back for a year. But from, from the perspective of trying to have an economy that works and satisfying employers' needs and recognizing that employers are the engine of our economy, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
I would echo what David said. I think that it is well-intended, the Senate legislation, as he said earlier. What the House does remains to be seen. Clearly, you have to deal with the issue of the magnet of employment opportunity. I was very amused this morning to hear on the news that the Social Security Administration has been running numbers of the industries that are the largest users, employers of illegal aliens. Do you know who is among the top seven largest employers of illegal aliens?
A particular business or?
The United States government. Non-conforming Social Security numbers. U.S. government. So clearly we have big problems with the illegal employment in the United States and employment being the magnet of opportunity that brings people to the United States. Mexico has 40% unemployment in certain parts of rural parts of Mexico and among men under the age of 35. So if you can't find a job in Mexico, we're the beneficiaries of that. And clearly, I would argue that the illegal population that's working in the United States is doing us a great service. We have an aging population. We have a population that is educated and has other options than picking apples and mowing grass in large part.
Well, we got a call. I don't know if they're still hanging on, but let's see and see if they agree. Caller?
Hey, Libby?
Yes.
Libby, I'm paying a lot of taxes for my illegals, and I don't know where it's going. And I guess the government's taking it. And what happens to all that money?
Good question. Keep listening.
Okay.
That money goes into the federal treasury, and It's currently offsetting the Social Security deficit, which is going to get very intense here in about 15 years.
Well, that's where it's going. Is it going to get worse if we stop allowing all these folks to come in and work?
That's one of the issues the H-2 program addresses quite nicely. The agricultural workers are not subject to Social Security and unemployment compensation taxes. Employers don't have to pay it. In the H-2B program, it's somewhat more inequitable because the H-2B workers actually are subject to FICA and FUTA, which are Social Security and unemployment. They're not, unfortunately, eligible to draw it, but it does go into the general treasury.
So if we took the 12,000 people and put them into the right place?
12 million, you mean?
12 million?
Sorry. The 12 million. See, sometimes it's such an overwhelming number that I get lost with it sometimes. We take the 12 million and make them legal, that we're only helping our own tax situation?
Not clear. Some people, yeah. I mean, there is an argument to be made. Libby just made it, that you're better off with the present system, because let me just elaborate a little more. What's happening now is, in order to get jobs and in order to fill out the payroll forms, they're giving, they being unauthorized workers, they're giving fake or stolen Social Security numbers, and monies are being deducted from their pay and put it into the Social Security system that they will never make a claim against. And I don't have the latest figures, that keep growing, but we're talking about in the billions of dollars. It's mm-hmm. a staggering number. And Libby's right. That number is being used to pay out Social Security payments to people who are now making claims on that system. So if we actually if those IOUs became real ones, there are those who would argue that's going to hurt the U.S. government.
After 1986, after the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, people who'd been here illegally were given the opportunity to rectify those accounts. I assume that something like that would be done under the eventual immigration legislation pending right now.
All right, 11:57 here on the Wake Up Call, our last few minutes with Libby Whitley and David Zakowicz. I do want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for being there for us today. Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Libby, on your way home, the new Lovingston 94.7. All right, just a moment or two left, and I was talking about ways that this affects me, because I am one selfish pain in the butt when I choose to be. And Libby, you mentioned wineries, etc. But are there, and I'm not asking you to say whether they're your businesses or not, but who in the Charlottesville area or in the local vacation area. I mean, somebody's telling me that if I go to, I'm going to Nag's Head next week, that a huge percentage of the people in the restaurant scene, I'm not talking about the guys in the back washing the dishes, but the people up front serving, are Europeans who come over for whichever visa or work issue they're set
right.
up with.
They're on H-2Bs or J-1s.
That could be on J-1.
Yeah, that's a work-study travel visa. It's a cultural exchange visa.
That would not be affected.
No,
that would not
the J-Visa be program is not affected by this bill.
Now, Wintergreen likes the J-1 program.
Yes, Wintergreen uses J's and H-2Bs as well.
So that would not be affected.
Anybody else? If I go to Barnes & Noble?
Well, let me give you an answer you probably didn't think of. I think you're going to be affected because a lot of high-tech and biotech companies, of which we have a lot in this area and we mm-hmm. want to have more, mm-hmm. are not going to be able to fill positions.
That's right.
And I think what's going to happen is we as a country are going to become a very unattractive alternative for Indian and Chinese engineers because they know that if they come here, there is no path to getting a green card under the present system, so they're going to go elsewhere, and we need those people. They're going to go to Canada. They're going to go to Great Britain. They're going to go to Australia. So I think we have a lot. The Microsofts of the world are terrified of this sort of legislation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is a competitive issue. The immigration issue, in many respects, is a U.S. competitiveness issue.
Well, thank you. I think we could keep talking about this for a couple more hours. I feel like we only skimmed it, and once we have a little more decision making up in Washington. Can I get you two to come back in?
Well, I would enjoy it.
Yeah, I'd enjoy that as well.
All right. Thank you both very much for coming on. David Izakowitz, McGuire Woods, Libby Whitley, Mid-Atlantic Solutions. Look them up in the phone book, boys and girls. Next week, by the way, we'll be talking about winery, the wine system, and some of the legislation that was passed and then changed and then passed and then changed. Join us.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.